This is LNL on Radio National, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. And in a minute, we're going to tell you why the Silicon Valley produces more nasty toxicity than your average nuclear dump. The dark satanic mills, so vividly described by William Blake and Charles Dickens, were meant to have died out, at least in the Western world, with the emergence of high-tech industries. They were hailed as a revolution in manufacturing, a move away from the dangerous, high-polluting shenanigans of the past, and the new high-tech industries, it was claimed, were non-polluting, had the potential to generate huge wealth, and could offer opportunities across social and cultural divides. Well, that was the theory. The reality, however, seems to have been rather different. According to my next guests, high-tech industries are some of the most toxic in the world. And, I quote, next to the nuclear industry, the production of electronic and computer components contaminates the air, land, water, and human bodies with a nearly unrivaled intensity. Three cheers for us Luddites who have always suspected this. Joining me to take a look at the darker side of the high-tech world is David Pellow. David is Associate Professor, Ethnic Studies Department, University of California, San Diego, and co-authored The Silicon Valley of Dreams, Environmental Justice, Immigrant Workers, and the High-Tech Global Economy. And David joins us from his home in California. Also joining us is George Cheng. George is Executive Director, Taiwan Watch Institute in Taiwan, which is a non-profit organization concerned with ecological and environmental issues in Asia, and he joins us from his office in Taipei. Gentlemen, I welcome you. David, if we can start with you, because Silicon Valley is really the home of high-tech industries, or is deemed to be such, and it's certainly the capital center of the high-tech dream. Can you tell us when high-tech industries first arrived in the Valley and how quickly they changed the landscape?
Right. Well, they arrived sometime in the 1950s, and sometime between, I'd say, 1954 and 1970, we saw at least 800 firms related to high-tech springing up in Silicon Valley. And this had, as you said, dramatic implications, dramatic impacts on the social, the economic, and the environmental landscape. We had, prior to that time, we had people who were working in the agricultural industry, producing all manner of fruits and produce in the canneries and the fields of the valley. It was known as the Valley of the Heart's Delight, because for miles and miles you could see orchards and blossoms and fruits all over the place, and people, it was known as one of the most fertile regions.
So you might have had a problem with hay fever, but apart from that, it was pretty good.
Right. Although, to be fair to the high-tech industry, you know, the agricultural industry management and ownership certainly was no friend to labor unions. So there were plenty of sort of legendary battles between labor and management, but there were jobs, and people were able to thrive and make a living. All of that changed very, very dramatically when high-tech came along. And, you know, the usual sort of paving over agricultural areas to create our concrete jungles, but also, of course, for high-tech firms, we needed large spaces to sort of build semiconductor chips and all these other sort of manufacturing that had to go on. And so the trees and the orchards and the fields became the victims of this next industry.
David, it was, in fact, the gift of the military-industrial complex, was it not? Wasn't this phase in American energy, creative technical energy, wasn't that pretty much pushed by the military?
Absolutely. We have all, you know, from the personal computer to radar, various types of satellites, other types of technology that, you know, we come to think of in many ways as very consumer-friendly today, really began with military usage. And so the origins of the high-tech industry absolutely are connected not only to the military, but in some ways, I would say sadly, to the university. Some of our best research scientists involved in some of these socially and ecologically problematic projects were academics and remain so. So it was the military, government, of course, and universities who were involved in this. And I think that's important to remember, not only because of the dark side of high tech, in that, you know, these, this sort of technology could be used for good or for ill, and oftentimes has been used for ill. But I think it's a wonderful example that counters this myth, this legend, that Silicon Valley in particular was the creation of people who simply had a commitment to hard work and wonderful ideas and just sort of put the axe to the grindstone.
Yes, they weren't just the sort of the clever fellows who started Apple. So, David, the first grown-up book I ever read half a century ago was The Grapes of Wrath, which talked about, of course, immigrants attempting, internal immigration patterns, attempting to come to California. But I understand this new industry did, in fact, draw vast numbers of immigrants from around the globe.
That's right. That's right. We have immigrants from, principally, from Asia and Latin America, but from many other parts of the world as well. We have, of course, in the state of California and the United States, something like 39 different immigrant groups from Asia alone. And Silicon Valley is in many ways a microcosm of what we see socially, ethnically, in the state of California. It's in terms of the region of Silicon Valley, it's what we would call majority-minority, that is, people who we would call people of color, ethnic minorities. When taken in an aggregate sort of sum, this population is somewhere on the order of 53-54%. And in the industry, we see those trends as well. The majority of people, at least doing the production, the dirty, the low-wage work, tend to be immigrants, tend to be working-class folks, and tend to be women.
Well, David, let's now tell the dark side of an industry which everyone has imagined is, well, it's pristine, science fictional, you know, dust-free. What's really going on when it comes to pollutants?
Well, there are a lot of surprises. I think what's really amazing is that this image of high tech, despite the evidence, it continues to be played out, and cities and towns and nations continue to buy into it, I think, lock, stock, and barrel. But what's really going on is I believe this industry is fundamentally toxic. In order to produce, for example, the semiconductor chip, you need literally gallons and gallons of bulk gases, toxic chemicals, all sorts of solvents are needed to use in the production process. And these things are often churned up and put through a variety of processes in what are known as fabrication plants, fab plants, and clean rooms within those plants. And they're called clean rooms because the industry goes to great effort to keep the chips, the microchips, the semiconductor chips, clean and free of a variety of forms of waste, dust, skin particles, dead skin, etc. Unfortunately, what this means is that workers, the people who are actually doing the labor, are being exposed to the chemicals that they're using to clean these chips. And so we have a variety of problems, from cancers, variety of tumors that people are coming down with in the United States and in other parts of the world. But this, not surprisingly, has leaked out into the communities, into the waterways.
I understand that 165,000 homes in one neighborhood suddenly found themselves contaminated with TCA, the solvent used to remove the grease from microchips.
Right. Yes. There's a legendary case, really, I think, the of the story of the dark side of Silicon Valley in, I think it was December of 1981, south side of San Jose, a neighborhood it had been discovered, had been the victim of a long-time toxic chemical leak. And we had, yes, several thousands, tens of thousands of gallons of TCA leaking into the groundwater, into the earth, and people were coming down with a variety of illnesses. And this was happening not only in the community, but also if you worked backwards to the origin of this chemical in the workplace as well.
This is LNL on Radio National, Radio Australia, and the World Wide Web. We're looking at the dark side of the Silicon Valley dream, and my guests are David Pellow, an associate professor in the Ethnic Studies Department at the University of California, and George Cheng, who's executive director of Taiwan Watch Institute, which is a non-profit organization concerned with ecological and environmental issues. So, George, let me bring you in here. When did high-tech industries pop up in your neighborhood?
Yeah, it was in 1970s. It come from United States with the form of OEM production here. Yes.
So when did this happen, George?
In 1970s.
I see, 1970s,
yes,
right.
Yeah.
So how much pollution problem do you have in Taiwan generated by these new industries?
Okay, right now there's some agricultural products and aquaculture products, something like cadmium rice and the cobalt oyster. We call the green oyster that's contaminated by copper, and the cadmium rice is contaminated by cadmium.
Well, that's a very nasty thing. So two fundamental food sources, rice and oysters.
Oyster.
And I understand pollution is also a major problem in the underground water, that there are villages near industrial parks which are now in jeopardy.
Yes, before, all those villagers, they used the underground water as a drinking water. Okay, so they suck from the underground to get the drinking water. But after a few years, when this, we call the high-tech, come into their neighborhood, then they cannot use this underground water. Mostly are contaminated by, or pollution by, the chemical of solvent, or some from the wastewater used by this high-tech industry.
Now, I understand that these industries represent between 30 and 40% of your economy. Therefore, George, you're taking on some very heavyweight people.
Yes, right. Yeah, for example, the only one base called the Hsinchu Scientific Industry Park. Their sales volume in 2000 is about 29.803 billion, and our GNP only 288 billion. So it's only this base is occupied about 10.35% on our GNP.
Mm.
And totally nationwide, maybe over 30 or 40 on high-tech products in our economy.
David, by the 1980s, there was, I understand, general knowledge, at least in the US, of the hazards associated with the electronics industry. When did the industries admit to an awareness of the problem?
Well, I would say it was sometime during the 1980s. We had a couple of studies, a few studies here and there that were not nationwide studies. They were either regional studies or studies that were conducted in particular firms, and this was sort of arrangement between a particular firm and maybe a university like the University of California at Berkeley. And in these examples during the 80s and even early 90s, we saw stunning results where even with small samples of workers at particular firms coming up with numbers that were quite scary in terms of reproductive hazards, in terms of a variety of other illnesses, and a variety of chemicals that people were working with that were known to cause a range of illnesses, particularly in animal studies. But to my knowledge, the industry as a whole continues to take the position that the issue of environmental contamination, particularly the issue of public health and occupational health, these are not nearly as serious as medical authorities and certainly advocates, activists, and labor unions have claimed. And
David, this is familiar stuff, isn't it? This is like the cigarette industry in endless denial.
Absolutely. And I believe, George, you may have been a part of this group, and it was just in November in 2002 in Silicon Valley, a group of activists and advocates and scholars who've been concerned with the impacts of this industry confronted the president of the Semiconductor Industry Association in San Jose, California, the so-called capital of Silicon Valley. And they presented to him a great deal of evidence about the social and public health and ecological impacts of the industry. And with a straight face, he denied it all and said that this was all a surprise to him and he had no knowledge of it and didn't believe that it was serious.
George, has there been any research in your country into the health of workers in these industries?
Till now, we didn't see any one public, okay? But I don't know if the government or the industry that do some of this research or not. There is one, as I know, still not public till now. And we heard there's some really negative impact for the workers in this industry. But till now, we didn't see any public publishing of this kind of investigation. We didn't see anyone.
David, has there been a white flight from these areas? Is the demography of the valley changing as people start to suss out the risks?
You know, a number of interesting things have happened. In a sense, the white flight wasn't so much an issue from the beginning, because you had, I think, very careful planning where you had populations of color and working class populations who weren't able to actually get access to certain neighborhoods that were to remain clean and free of much of this industry. Now, in the cases that I am aware of where you had particularly middle class, white neighborhoods who were impacted by these toxins and pollutants or became aware of them, then you saw, I think, in some cases white flight, but in other cases, I think more prominently, you saw lawyers and advocates and politicians coming to the aid of these populations. And, for example, in Palo Alto, Menlo Park, and in north of San Francisco, communities there passed extraordinarily strict zoning laws that, in effect, banned much of future high-tech development that could have been nasty and environmentally dangerous. So Silicon Valley is a place where you also have, of course, more millionaires per capita than just about anywhere in the United States, but these folks live in parts of the valley that are relatively clean. Poor people and people of color are in places where air pollution concentration is extraordinarily high, and ground pollution and groundwater pollution is high as well.
David, I would have thought that there's an elite in that industry, and I'm not thinking of the boss of Microsoft so much as many of the intellectuals that are involved in the profession of electronics, who would be easy to convert to this cause, who would be outraged by it.
Yes, you would think so. And to give some folks credit, there are people who have who hold such positions who have been, I think, very strong advocates. But as a class, as a group, as a category of workers, it's unfortunately hasn't been the case. And I think there are a number of reasons for this. One of which is simply we see this across a variety of hazardous industries. People need to make a living, and we rationalize away and sort of we are in denial, I think, about what we know or suspect are extraordinary hazards of our job, because you need to put food on the plate. And
well, that happens at university, doesn't it? Whether it's farmers handling chemicals in my part of the world, everywhere people rationalize dangers. And I guess, George, that's what they do in Taiwan.
Yes. Yeah, in Taiwan, we got some of this kind of industry today. It's something like the West solvent or West waters overflow from the West treatment. And all those kind of material is contaminated from water, soil, that go to the food chain, something like agricultural product that told the cat meal, rice, and from water to agricultural products, something like copper oyster, even underground water for drinking. There was a case in 1999. There was some solvent dumping, and the upstream of the river for drinking, then it's brought about 7 days for 3 million people's drinking water south of Taiwan.
Well, gentlemen, I thank you for that. David, I find your argument very, very powerful, and I commend your use of the term environmental inequalities and environmental racism, because that's quite clearly what we're dealing with. I've been talking to George Cheng, Executive Director of Taiwan Watch Institute. It's an NGO, a non-profit organization concerned with ecological and environmental issues. And David Pello, David's Associate Professor, Ethnic Studies Department, University of California. And his book is The Silicon Valley of Dreams, Environmental Injustice, Immigrant Workers, and the High-Tech Global Economy. You can see why I prefer a pencil, although it's probably going to give me lead poisoning.